It's time for Motherlode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherlode. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.
Well, good morning and welcome to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. This weekend, we are pleased to be joined on the telephone from Washington, D.C. by District 5 Republican Congressman Tom McClintock, who is here to get us up to speed on happenings at the state at the federal capitol. Congressman McClintock, it's great having you back on Motherlode Views.
Great to be back on, BJ. Thank you.
You know, getting into some recent events, first off, California sadly lost a congressional leader, Doug LaMalfa, recently. How closely did you work with Congressman LaMalfa, and what are your thoughts on his legacy?
Oh, very closely, and it's a tremendous loss for our community, for our state, for our country. I'll tell you this, he was the kindest and most sincere person that I've ever encountered during more than 40 years of public service. He passionately defended working people in the rural community where he was born and raised and grew up, and he always did it with a good-natured smile, a sense of humor, and just manifest humility. And he's going to be sorely missed. We've lost a very good man, a very, very good man.
You know, I really appreciate your sharing your thoughts and your memories on his passing. I know it's a tough situation. You know, getting into some other topics, you know, there's been a lot happening recently nationally. I'm curious your reaction to, first off, the arrest of Venezuelan's President Maduro.
Well, I think it is a revival of the Monroe Doctrine. It sends a powerful message to tyrants around the world that America is back. It removes the worst despot in the entire Western Hemisphere, I think that it is going to bear enormous benefits for the people of Venezuela.
Are you surprised at how there's been such mixed reaction on that issue?
I have been, particularly as you look at what the Democrats were saying just a few years ago, attacking Trump because he had not removed Maduro. So he approves what was a very remarkable military mission that was pulled off with precision. And now they're attacking him for that. So I guess it just goes to show that there are some people that are just really hard to please.
You know, getting into other issues, how about the situation of the shooting involving an ICE agent in Minneapolis? What was your initial reaction and your early opinions on that?
Well, I've seen the video, and it's pretty clear that an ICE vehicle was attempting to leave the area in near riot conditions. A civilian vehicle suddenly moved in front of it to block its departure. We then saw an ICE officer approach the vehicle, issue a lawful order for the driver to get out of the car, and instead of complying with that order, she backed up, pointed the car in the direction of another officer, shifted into drive, and stepped on the gas while the first officer had his hand on the door. And she then accelerated in the direction of the other ICE officer at the moment when he fired into that vehicle. An investigation is ongoing. We're going to lot more in coming days. I assume he was wearing a body camera, which will tell us how things were unfolding from his perspective. As I said, from the angle I saw, it certainly looked like she was pointed the car in his direction. Whether she was planning to turn or not, I don't think he was in a position to assess. And of course, then there are a lot of other questions, like, why did the driver attempt to block the ICE vehicle as it was leaving? Why did the driver feel motivated to obstruct clearly uniformed federal law enforcement officials in the performance of their duties? Why did she willfully refuse to comply with a lawful order by those officers? Why she pointed the vehicle toward another officer while hitting the gas? These are all questions that, you know, we'll need to assess in coming days, and that's what the investigation is for.
Big picture, have you been pleased with the Trump administration's handling of the immigration issue?
Oh, absolutely. He was elected in order to restore the sovereignty of our country and enforce our immigration laws. And we've got to start with some pretty simple truths. If we don't enforce our immigration laws, we have no immigration laws. If we have no immigration laws, we have no border. And if we have no border, we have no country. Our immigration laws weren't written to keep people out. They were written to assure that when they come to our country, they come with a sincere desire to become Americans, to obey our laws, to contribute to our nation. Illegal immigration undermines that whole process, and that's why the law requires that any adult who's illegally in this country shall be detained. Those are the exact words of the law, shall be detained and deported. For 4 years, the Democrats ignored that law. They produced the largest illegal mass migration in history, and now the law is being enforced. And it shouldn't surprise us that the largest illegal mass migration in history now requires the largest legal mass deportation in history. I do think we have to look at what some on the radical left are doing to motivate individuals like this woman in Minneapolis, that somehow it's all right to obstruct law enforcement in the discharge of their duties. They are simply enforcing the law that the Congress wrote. If the Democrats don't like that law, if they object to its enforcement, they don't have a right to incite people to actively obstruct it. In a nation of laws, the answer is not to obstruct the law, it's to change the law. And a lot of these Democrats are sitting in the very institution that writes these laws. If they think these laws that enforce our nation's sovereignty are wrong, well, then make the case to change them. But don't incite people to obstruct law enforcement officials when they are enforcing those laws that the Congress has written. Yeah, Lincoln said it best. He said, there is no grievance that is a fit object for redress by mob law. He was right then. It's sad that we have to repeat those words in our modern era, but we've reached that point.
A lot of issues to get to in today's show. We are now in the year 2026. You know, looking back at 2025, a lot happened last year, but what were some of the kind of the main highlights and takeaways in your eyes as a congressman?
Oh, two very big ones. We've already discussed one, and that was restoring our borders on the first day of this administration. You know, we've seen illegal border crossings drop. I've seen figures as high as 96-97%. Our borders are once again secure. We didn't have to change any laws, as the president said. We just needed to change presidents. We've elected a president who was determined to enforce those laws. He has, and the benefits are, among many other things. It was no coincidence that working people's wages were falling during the Biden administration as he flooded the labor market with literally millions of illegal low-wage laborers. That drove down wages for Americans. Since those laws are being enforced, we're finally watching American wages rise again. That was number one, was the enforcement of our immigration laws. And right along with that was the adoption of the Big Beautiful Bill that prevented the largest tax increase in American history. People in our district would be paying several thousand dollars, an average household, several thousand dollars more a year in taxes had that bill not gone through. But far more important than that was the fact that it has it incorporated a large amount of regulatory relief, which I think is just as important as the tax relief, and provides additional relief for working families that get overtime or that work for tips, those who are over 65. Those with children are going to see major tax reductions as they start filling out their tax forms this spring. That is Reaganomics on steroids, and I believe that it has already set the stage for one of the greatest economic expansions in our nation's history, And we're already starting to see that. I mean, I'm sure you saw the third quarter GDP. The blue chip economists were predicting about 1% to 2% growth. We clocked in at 4.3% growth. And the fourth quarter, we have the estimate now from the Atlanta Fed. I just saw that this morning. They're estimating more than 5% growth in the fourth quarter, which would be just extraordinary. I mean, we averaged less than 2% under Joe Biden. So I think that by spring, people are going to be feeling the positive effects of the Big Beautiful Bill very clearly in their own lives.
Need to take a quick break. We're talking with Congressman Tom McClintock on this weekend's Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. We'll have our second segment coming up in just a minute. We welcome you back to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host, talking with Motherlode Congressman Tom McClintock on this weekend show. He's a Republican. We're speaking via telephone from Washington, D.C. Congressman McClintock, you talked about some of the highlights of 2025. You mentioned the big, beautiful bill and also immigration. What do you feel are going to be the big issues looking ahead to 2026?
Well, I think energy and health care in particular, these are sectors where we've seen huge increases in costs over the last few years. And as Ronald Reagan used to warn us, government is not the solution to these problems. Government is the problem. All of the war on fossil fuels that the Biden administration waged over the last 4 years has now been lifted. And we're seeing across the rest of the country fuel prices decline already rather dramatically. Unfortunately, not in California because of the continuing war on fossil fuels that Gavin Newsom and the Democrats have waged. As you know, in 1980, we had 40 refineries operating in California. We were down to 9 last year, and two of those are now closing. By April, we'll be down to 7. Meanwhile, all of the restrictions on gas stations is causing widespread gas station closures. That's going to further constrict supply. So unfortunately, in California, there are some very specific California policies that have to be addressed at the state level. But nationally, I think we are going to see an explosion of energy supply, and that means a reduction in the cost of energy, which is going to affect all sectors of the national market. And of course, the other thing is health care. And it's so clear to me what has happened. I mean, this is health care is one of the very few sectors of the economy where you've seen rapidly escalating prices with declining consumer satisfaction. So prices go up. The quality of the service goes down. What's happening? Well, it's pretty clear what's happening. We severed the connection between the patient and the payer. And the result is the patient doesn't care about the cost. The payer doesn't care about the quality. So you end up with the worst of both worlds, spiraling costs and declining quality. And you can see that's most clearly with Obamacare. Obamacare policies. Have been literally growing at twice the rate of the expensive private employer-based plans because it's taken out the competition, it's taken out the consumer control, and so you've got two choices. For the 7% of the market that gets Obamacare, do you keep pumping subsidies into it? That's what the House just voted to do against my opposition. What that means is another $80 billion taken from taxpayers that have flooding the healthcare market. That drives up healthcare costs for everybody and then hides it for the 7% who get the subsidies. I think a much better way of doing it is what we passed out last month from the House, and that is to restore the power of the patient as a consumer to choose the policy that best meets their own needs and circumstances. I mean, it used to be that most people would choose among hundreds of competing plans a catastrophic policy to protect them from an illness or an injury that could bankrupt them. And then they'd pay for their routine out-of-pocket costs, or routine costs out-of-pocket, I should say. That meant a competition kept the prices down. It kept the quality high, and people could tailor their health care to their own needs and means. Obamacare and the other government interventions in the health care market have destroyed that freedom, and the result is spiraling costs and declining quality. We need to get back to the systems that worked, and the good news is we know what works. Competition works. Freedom of choice works. That's the whole idea behind the HSAs, the health savings accounts that the president's proposed. We passed out a bill from the House that makes it a lot easier for small businesses to form association health plans, which would increase choice for consumers. Again, only 7% of the market gets Obamacare. And it expands the use of health savings accounts so that people can meet their health care expenses with pre-tax dollars. It requires transparency with pharmacy benefit managers. And according to the Congressional Budget Office, that approach will lower overall health care costs, not just for the 7% of people who get Obamacare, but also for the 93% of the people who have other plans. The estimate is that overall it would mean about 11% reduction in premiums and taxpayer savings about $36 billion. And compare that to extending the Obamacare subsidies, which will cost us $80 billion and apply to only 7% of the market.
The changes that you would like to see, do you think it would be a benefit for the smaller rural hospitals across your district?
Oh, yes. Well, as a matter of fact, the big, beautiful bill provided $50 billion for supporting rural hospitals. It's rather odd that the Democrats who are complaining about rural health care voted against the provision to provide $50 billion for rural hospital support. But we did get that into law. It was signed, and it's there. So we'll be able to provide that support for the rural hospitals. But again, the rural hospitals are dealing with exactly the same cost pressures as the rest of the market. And those cost pressures are derived from excessive government intervention in the marketplace.
How about fire prevention? Do you have any updates on legislation related to fire from the Natural Resources Committee?
Well, we're still waiting for the Senate to act on the Fix Our Forests Act that includes the provisions of my legislation to cut red tape with the National Environmental Policy Act for forest thinning projects up to 10,000 acres. We've talked about this on your show many times before. We got those provisions for the Tahoe Basin back in 2016, and in the now 10 years since that was implemented, in the Tahoe Basin, we've seen the timber harvest off the federal lands go from 1 million board feet a year to 9 million board feet a year. We've seen the environmental review process go from an average of 5 years down to a few months. We've seen the reports, the environmental reports, going from 800 pages plus down to a few dozen. We've seen the amount of acreage in the Tahoe Basin tripled, and of course that's what saved the city of South Lake Tahoe from the Caldor fire. The same fire crossed the boundary line in the El Dorado Forest, hit a tract we had been trying to get treated for 10 years, but was constantly held up by environmental groups and environmental legislation stemming from NEPA. The same fire hit that tract, exploded out of control, and took out the town of Grizzly Flat. So we know that process works very well. We got that out of the House almost a year ago now, and unfortunately it is still sitting in the Senate. I remain cautiously optimistic that we'll be able to get that out in some form, but the problem is that the Democrats are stalling it. And I would call upon our own Democratic senators to take the lead in getting this out of the Senate and onto the president's desk so that we can start managing our forests again.
Timber industry plays a major economic role, of course, in the Sierra Foothills region in your district.
It used to.
I was going to say, my question would lean into, have you heard much from timber industry leaders, just kind of what the state of the industry is like right now?
Yeah, I think that they know that it's just a matter of time before we restore the policies that managed our forests so well for so long. And they were an integral part of that. All of the excess timber in a forest comes out in one of two ways. Either we carry it out or nature burns it out. There's no other way. When the timber industry, when we auctioned off excess timber, and again, this was not a willy-nilly process. We sent foresters out into the forest every year. They would mark off the surplus trees. We'd then auction them off to timber companies, lumber logging companies. They would come in and pay us to remove that excess timber. They would mill it in local mills. A quarter of the proceeds from those federal timber auctions went right back into our local governments to compensate for the property that's not on the local tax rolls. And at the same time, the rest of it would go into the Forest Service that we put back into our forests. And we had a far fewer and less intense forest fires. The number of mills in the Sierra dropped from 160 to, I believe, about 30 or thereabouts. So you can see the problem. We've got to restore the policies at work. I think we're on the cusp of doing so. When we do, the timber industry is going to be poised for dramatic expansion again in California, and I think it's going to be a huge economic driver for our mountain communities, and is going to be the most important thing we can do to restore the health and fire resiliency of our forests and assure that our forests will be there for future generations. You know, in the last decade, we've lost now more than a fourth of our national forest land to catastrophic fire. The reason is because we stopped carrying out the excess timber and nature returned to burn it out. And the problem is it takes hundreds of years for these forests to regrow. Nature doesn't care. Nature's got all the time in the world. That's why we formed the Forest Service, to take the gardening responsibilities over from nature so that we could preserve our forests generation after generation. The forests are now morbidly overgrown. In the Sierra, the estimates that we've got about 400% of the timber that the land can support. That makes it susceptible to disease, pestilence, drought, and ultimately catastrophic wildfire. That's a choice that we made when we followed the radical environmentalists down a dead end of benign neglect for our forests, and it turns out that the results are not so benign.
Need to take one more break. We're talking with Congressman Tom McClintock on this weekend's Motherload Views. Motherload Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. We'll have our final segment in just a minute.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460. Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
And on this weekend's Motherload Views, we're joined on the telephone by Congressman Tom McClintock from Washington, D.C., getting updated on federal matters and issues. Congressman McClintock, when we ended last segment, you were talking about the impacts of the timber industry and what you're witnessing. I'm kind of curious your thoughts, too, on the Secure Rural Schools and Community Self-Determination Act, because that kind of ties into the timber industry and federal subsidies given to local governments and schools to offset some of those losses from the timber industry.
Well, the Secure Rural Schools program and PILT, the Payments in Lieu of Taxes, are there for a single reason, and that is that the federal government has taken so much local land off the tax rolls that it strangles local communities. Instead of allowing that land to be productively used, it's basically placed off limits. And the result is, as we've already discussed, forests that are morbidly overgrown and are now dying and falling victim to catastrophic fire, and it strangles the local commerce in the region. So Pilt and Secure Rural Schools are a small part of the losses that our mountain communities have suffered because of excessive land ownership of the federal government. They're absolutely essential to provide a lifeline to these communities, but we'd be doing so much better, you know, if we had if we would restore the timber industry to take care of our forests and restrain the federal government from excessive holdings that they can't even manage. You know, you look at California, for example. Nearly half of our state is owned by the federal government. About three-fourths of Nevada is owned by the federal government. We had a hearing there a few years ago in North Las Vegas, and the subject was the land shortage in Nevada. Now, of course, you fly in to Las Vegas after miles and miles and miles of empty land as far as you can see, but the federal government owns that, does very little with it, and the result is a land shortage amidst this all of this land. Same thing's true up in Alaska, where the federal government controls about two-thirds of the land there. You compare that to Texas. Texas controls the federal government controls 3% of the land in Texas, but nearly half in California. You go up to Alpine County, the federal government owns about 96% of the land. That's land that's off the tax rolls, that is not being used for productive purposes, and in fact, because it was so poorly managed, much of that burned a few years ago and destroyed what little tourism they were able to attract. So Secure Rural Schools and Pilt is a lifeline, but it's a poor substitute for the productive use of our lands.
We have a few minutes just left on this weekend's Mother Lode Views. You know, looking ahead to the midterm elections in light of redistricting and everything, how do you feel Republicans are going to do this year?
Last year, Republican candidates for Congress received 40% of the vote in the state of California. 40% of the vote went to Republicans. That should have delivered 20 seats for Republicans. We got 9. Prop 50, so gerrymanders the state that it's going to be likely 4. So 40% of the vote gets just 4 out of 52 seats, about 8% of the seats. That's not democracy. That is despotism in its purest form, and it's being challenged in court. You know, I've been fortunate. My district under Proposition 50 is about 80% intact, and much of the rest of it is a territory that I represented before. But what it does to the right of voters, the self-determination, is just an outrage. And I am shocked that so many Californians fell for the load of crap that we heard from Gavin Newsom, saying that he's saving democracy. He's not saving democracy. He's perverting democracy.
Well, Congressman McClintock, we've run out of time on this weekend's Mother Lode Views. Thank you so much for coming on. Any closing comments you'd like to make?
Well, I'll tell you this, BJ, I'm very optimistic about the future of the country. As I said earlier, I think the Big Beautiful Bill, which is already starting to have an effect on the economy, is going to be in full blossom by the spring and early summer. I think the next election is going to be decided on two simple questions. You're better off today than you were 2 years ago, and as a result of the Big Beautiful Bill, the answer to that question is going to be a resounding yes. And the other question is, do you want to bring the Democrats back to reopen our borders? And I think that that is also going to be a self-evident answer for 80 or 90% of the population. The proof will be in the pudding. How people answer that question next year, you're better off today than you were 2 years ago. I think the answer is going to be a resounding yes. I think that we've finally got our country back on the right track.
Going to have to end on that note. We thank Congressman Tom McClintock for being our guest today. I'm BJ Hansen. I was your host. We'll see you back next week for more Mother Lode Views.
You've been listening to Mother Lode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Mother Lode. Mother Lode Views has been brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.